And we will go on to 072832, Angela Tyson versus Gannett Incorporated.
Good morning, Mr. Walcott.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court, my name is Chris Walcott for Appellant Angela Tyson in this matter. Ms. Tyson's appealing the decision of Richard Young, granting summary judgment to the defendant, who I'll refer to as the Star. In particular, Judge Young found that Ms. Tyson was unable to establish a prima facie case. In particular, he determined that she couldn't identify anyone similarly situated to her that was treated more favorably than she was. Respectfully, Ms. Tyson contends that Judge Young erred in making that determination. And ultimately, she asked that this court remand this matter back to the district court with directions consistent with this court's order today.
Even if we agree that she submitted enough evidence to establish a prima facie case, what evidence of pretext was provided? In other words, what evidence was provided indicating that Gannett, the Star, did not really believe that she lacked sufficient seniority to avoid those restricted tasks?
Yeah, I think the issues of similarly situated and pretext are somewhat intertwined in this matter. I'll try to address your question directly. The Star contended that it was, in its brief, that it's indisputable that there's no position that Ms. Tyson could perform. That's miraculously disputed in the record. First, Ms. Tyson, despite having less seniority than the similarly situated individual she named, Ms. Harvey, prior to her injury in October of 2002, was able, with her seniority, to bid into a position that required her to work less, or I'm sorry, to lift less than 25 pounds on a regular basis. As a result, the work restrictions should have had no impact on her ability to do her job. Moreover,
if you don't lean so hard into that, it won't be bouncing.
I'm sorry, Your Honor. No. Moreover, at the time that the Star denied Ms. Tyson the right to return to work, there was at least one other employee, Wanda Render, and others that she didn't identify but recognized, given her experience with the company,
Who are they?
Ms. Render, in her affidavit submitted with appellants, the appendix, was unable to identify the individuals particularly, Your Honor.
So she couldn't identify who they are.
She couldn't identify them, but she in fact had less seniority than Ms. Tyson by the order of 6 months or more, and she worked a position that was comparable to the one Ms. Tyson worked and could in fact have worked if she had been allowed to return from the medical leave like Ms. Harvey was. The other two points I'd raise with respect to your question, Your Honor, is if you look at Judge Young's decision, it mirrors the appellee's motion for summary judgment, the Star's motion, in that it makes some distinction between this permanent versus temporary restriction. The record shows in Ms. Hayden, Iris Hayden, the senior consultant HR representative's deposition, that an employee with a permanent work restriction could, in fact, if they had sufficient seniority, be placed in a position that they could have worked within the work restrictions that the employee had. So this idea or notion that a permanent restriction is somehow different than a temporary is disputed, in fact, by Ms. Hayden's testimony itself. So to rely on this permanent work restriction as a reason that she couldn't do it makes no sense.
Well, was any evidence presented as to the number of less strenuous jobs available in the seniority ranking for individual shifts that would have allowed Gannett to easily calculate whether she could always choose tasks within her limitations?
Yeah, I don't recall anything in the record identifying a job analysis or anything like that, Your Honor. It would have been as easy as to start speaking to Ms. Tyson about the types of jobs she historically was able to do with the Star given her priority.
But isn't she compelled to put forward evidence that, you know, Gannett was lying or trying to cover up discriminatory conduct?
I think she can prove that too, Your Honor. In a case decided by this court in February of 2008, after the briefing was filed, specifically Duncan versus Fleetwood Motorhomes of Indiana, the citation is 518 Federal 3rd 486. The plaintiff, Mr. Duncan, worked for a number of years in a position as a material handler. Ultimately, he suffers a workplace injury, has some work restrictions, but able to perform his job. This court held that Mr. Duncan had a fine performance record and the company didn't dispute that. Nevertheless, there was a job description requiring him to lift between 87 and 93 pounds. He never performed those duties, never had that requirement. And again, this court found that it's entirely inconsistent to say that someone has good performance yet somehow can't meet the basic job expectations set forth in the job description. That same situation happens here. We're looking at a job description that has a weightlifting restriction, which covers a broad class of mailer assistant jobs, but doesn't pertain to the specific job Ms. Tyson is performing. Nevertheless, the STAR decides, because of her lack of seniority, she can't bid into the job based on this job description, but it's undisputed in the record that the STAR didn't take exception to Ms. Tyson's performance. The court held there that conflicting result was enough in and of itself to show pretext. So Ms. Tyson could have performed the position if they had just taken the moment to ask what she'd done historically. There are other people working in position that she could have done consistent with her work restrictions. And as I mentioned a second ago, there's case law on point that I think is analogous to this case. Good performance, could do the job. The job description didn't accurately mirror what her actual job duties were. And this court held that was sufficient to show pretext. With respect to the similarly situated argument, I touched on a moment ago that Judge Young held two things in particular. First, he found that seniority to be material, and he found the permanent nature of Ms. Tyson's restrictions to be material. I think with respect to the permanent nature of the restrictions, that's easy to overcome. Again, Ms. Hayden's deposition testimony, which can be found in Exhibit D to appellant's appendix to its appellant brief, shows that Ms. Hayden wouldn't have considered the permanent restriction so long as there's sufficient seniority. So that statement makes no sense. If the STAR doesn't give it any weight, Judge Young should not have either. I'll reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, Your Honor.
Mr. Borowski, good morning.
May it please the court, again, Craig Borowski for the appellant, defendant below, Gannett Company Incorporated, which is the parent of the Indianapolis Star, and the Indianapolis Star is the employer, even to this day, of Ms. Tyson. Your Honors, the district court properly granted summary judgment for Gannett in this case, finding that Ms. Tyson failed to establish that she was treated differently or more, that similarly situated employees outside of her protected class were treated differently or more favorably. And alternatively, Your Honors, as this court can affirm summary judgment on any basis supported by the record, we respectfully submit that an alternate grounds for affirming in this case would be that the STAR had legitimate non-discriminatory reasons for its actions, and Ms. Tyson has failed to show pretext.
Couldn't Gannett have readily calculated whether she had the seniority to choose less strenuous jobs by comparing the number of such jobs with the seniority lists?
Indeed, Your Honor. And the deposition of Iris Hayden indicates that, according to her, she is a human resources person for the STAR who has adequate firsthand knowledge that Ms. Tyson did not have the requisite seniority to enable her to bid out of jobs absolutely that may have entailed her lifting more than 25 pounds.
Did the number of less strenuous jobs vary day to day?
It did, Your Honor. Essentially, how it works is the ground rule for mailer assistants is that they need to be able to perform various essential job functions, one of which is the ability to lift, carry, push, or pull 35 or more pounds.
So was there a minimum number that could have been used as a starting point for determining the availability of less strenuous jobs to a person with her seniority? Is there any way to
It varies production-wise and based on production demands, Your Honor. Depending on the circumstances, there could be a day or even a shift where there's a lot of heavy lifting, there could be a day or shift where there's none. And I think some of the record evidence shows that there were occasions, and the STAR does not dispute that there were occasions on which mailer assistants may not have to lift certain amounts. But what the issue here, Your Honor, is both a matter of seniority and permanence of the restrictions for one very simple reason. It may be the case that given a set of employees who are assigned to work as mailer assistants on a particular shift, it may be the case that Ms. Tyson has enough seniority to avoid the lifting requirement. It may equally be the case that on another shift, given who is assigned, she does not. And that's where the permanency of the restriction plays into this. The question is, does she have enough seniority to guarantee that under any set of circumstance, no matter who's assigned, she will not have to perform those lifting restrictions? And we submit that the record establishes that she did not have that level of seniority. That's why she was unable to work during the period of June to November 2003 under the permanent restriction that, of less than 25 pounds.
Will the record tell us that she still works there?
Yes, Your Honor. The permanency of the restriction point, Your Honor, Ms. Tyson downplays that in the briefs, and again, the seniority and the permanency of the restrictions are intertwined in this case. You can't look at one without looking at the other. It's undisputed in the record that Ms. Harvey had 4 years more seniority than Ms. Tyson. And again, Ms. Harvey is the only comparator to whom Ms. Tyson points in the briefs, a Caucasian employee who she believes was treated differently. The record indicates that Ms. Tyson's seniority placed her in the top half of the mailer assistants and enabled her to, during those periods when she had lifting restrictions, temporary in nature, mind you, bid out of jobs that would require her to violate those restrictions. Another key point about Ms. Harvey, Your Honors, is that she was actually treated the same as Ms. Tyson in one critical respect. There were times where Ms. Harvey had restrictions such that she could not perform essential functions of her job, even with her level of seniority. And during that period, the STAR placed her on disability leave, just as it did Ms. Tyson. So the treatment of Ms. Harvey actually shows consistent treatment within the confines of the STAR's seniority system. Going on, Your Honors, again, we believe that the district court's opinion should be affirmed because the district court properly found that Ms. Tyson failed to meet one of her prima facie elements. But to touch on the point Your Honor made regarding pretext, Ms. Tyson has failed to make that showing. As the court has recognized, pretext means a lie. It means a phony explanation. It means more than just the STAR may have been wrong in its decision-making. And much of the evidence appellant puts forward suggests her belief that the STAR was wrong. Well, maybe being wrong does not equate to an adequate showing of pretext here. Indeed, the record, in addition to the point about Janet Harvey that I just discussed, shows that another Caucasian employee was treated the same, Molly Foster. She was an individual who had a workers' compensation related injury, received medical restrictions, was unable to work as a result of them within the confines of the STAR seniority system based on her seniority, and ultimately went out on disability leave. In addition, the STAR permitted Ms. Tyson at times, both before and after the period in question, to work within restrictions, again, where her restrictions and the STAR seniority system could all function together. That's a notable point. This is a race discrimination case in which Ms. Tyson claims that the STAR did not permit her to work for the six-month period at issue based on her race. She has the burden of proving that there is at least enough evidence to create a triable question of fact whether that was the case, and we respectfully submit that the fact that she was allowed to permit work within certain restrictions before and even after the period in question is strong evidence that race was not at play with respect to the decision at issue. Again, Ms. Tyson suffered no adverse employment action in the form of discipline. Her employment was not terminated, and during the period in question, she received disability benefits, approximately 60% of her salary and full benefits. Your Honors, respectfully, we submit that the plaintiff has not carried her burden of proof in this case of establishing that similarly situated individuals were treated differently or more favorably. If the court should find that there is a question of fact on that point, Based on evidence in the record, we believe this court can affirm the grant of summary judgment based on the fact that the Star had legitimate non-discriminatory reasons for its actions and Ms. Tyson has failed to make a showing of pretext. Again, Ms. Tyson has a burden in terms of pretext of showing something more than the Star could have been wrong, and that is the most that she could ever show based on the testimony and affidavits in the record, and that does not carry the day. I'd be happy to address any questions you have at this point, Your Honors. Thank you very much for your time and the privilege of appearing before this court.
Thank you. How much time? 2.5 minutes.
I appreciate that counsel for Appley acknowledges that seniority and or seniority is not an easy question, this issue. It's not two people selected, one has 10 years, one has 7. The question is, within the priority system espoused by the SPAR pursuant to collective bargaining agreement, Ms. Tyson could have found a job that she could have worked consistent with the work restrictions. While Ms. Hayden, and I think it's simply her opinion, I don't recall anything in the record showing evidence upon what that opinion is based. It's her opinion that there were no positions she could work, and that's disputed by both Ms. Tyson and Ms. Render. So there's a question of fact that should be resolved by a fact finder as to whether or not there was work available. Additionally, while there's some issue made about how important the permanency of her work restrictions are, again, I would encourage the court to look at Ms. Hayden's deposition testimony on page 41 and 42. She doesn't make it an issue. Why the court does and why the Star tries to is sort of beyond me. There's also some discussion about Ms. Foster and Ms. Tyson being treated differently at different times. Those are issues for the fact finder, not for the court. The question is, can she create an inference of pretext? And as I discussed earlier, I believe she can. If the jury chooses not to make that inference, that is clearly their province, but it is their province. Finally, with respect to Ms. Harvey and Ms. Tyson, the question isn't, was Ms. Harvey at some other occasion treated the same as Ms. Tyson? The question is, could they have been placed in a position consistent with the work restrictions? The answer is definitively no here. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel. And the case will be taken under advisement.